Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the STEM Files on Blog Talk Radio, where we highlight the best and brightest in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I'm your host, Tariq Muhammad, Chairman and Chief Scientific Officer of Original Man Scientific. I'm joined by my illustrious co-host, Brother Jabril.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Peace and blessings, everyone. My name is Jabril Muhammad. I am the Vice Chairman of Original Man Scientific, as well as Materials Engineer in the field of engineering. Very happy to be here, and let's have a wonderful show, everyone.
Great, great. Awesome. So we are actually in the month of March. This is, some of us may not know, this is Women's History Month. So why not start off the month of March with a woman, a very powerful woman in science, as our first guest for the month of March. We have on the line Sister Anika Watkins out of New York City. How are you, sis?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. So just kind of how we do things on the show, you know, we let people know that you're online, and we ask you to kind of give us a brief background of yourself, what you do in science, and how you like to how do you envision yourself in science in the future?
Well, first of all, let me just start by saying thank you. Thank you both.
Absolutely.
Peace and blessings, everyone. I appreciate the opportunity for you both inviting me to speak today. I'm very excited because I've never done anything like this before, and you know, so
awesome.
I'm very thankful for the opportunity.
Great,
man.
Great.
Thank you.
Yes. So I'll just give you a little bit of background. So basically, I've been working with the Board of Education for the past 17 to 18 years. Pretty much ever since I got out of college, and I started out as a general education teacher. I was doing that for about 10 years, and I taught in high school and middle school, Regents biology and chemistry, had to prepare students for that, and did really well with that, had really high success rates in terms of getting kids to pass their Regents exams. I've also taught honors biology, earth science, I mean, you name it, I've taught it. and now, for the past 7 to 8 years, I've been working as a middle school, actually K to 8 science teacher with a special education setting. And, you know, it's been very rewarding and very challenging also. So I've been doing that. And, and I thoroughly enjoy it. That's why I wake up every day, and I'm glad to do what I do, and to, you know, be a force in the students' lives that I teach. Now, with the special education setting, it's a little bit different than how it is in general ed. I'm sure you all know about state standards and national standards, and when you work in the general education setting, those sorts of things are really pushed hard on teachers to get kids to pass exams.
Right.
That's all you're told. Teach to the test. But, you know, with special education students, I have a lot more flexibility in what I do. And so, you know, I've decided to use STEM as the foundation for the lessons that I teach. And I've done all sorts of things with students, from paper engineering to chemical engineering, electrical engineering, even as young as kindergarten. So, you know, whatever type of ideas I can come up with to get kids involved and to get them motivated, you know, using, you know, however many strategies, that's usually what I do.
Wonderful, wonderful. So just coming back from this, let's just take it a little further back into your childhood, or into maybe, you know, high school, junior high. At what moment did you realize that you wanted a career in science?
You know, the funny thing is, I started out not even, I've always loved science, so let's start there. I would say probably when I was in the fifth or sixth grade, that's when I noticed that, you know, it was a lot more intriguing to me than some of the other subjects. But I never really wanted to be a teacher. That wasn't something I decided to do until later on. So when I was maybe in about the fifth or sixth grade, I had a really good teacher who, you know, she was very intent on showing me that, you know, I probably do very well in the sciences. And she actually encouraged me and my family to get me interviewed for a specialized middle school. It was the first of its kind in Harlem called Mott Hall. And so she encouraged me and my family. She said, you know what? You know, I think your daughter would be really good for this school. She's excelling, you know, in certain subject areas. So, you know, let's get her involved in that. And so from sixth to eighth grade, I went to this this middle school. And there was a couple of, I guess you could say, bridge programs. So the local university, they actually would take some students who they saw that did really well in math and science. They took them to, they took us rather, to the school to take some college courses, college level courses, of course, adapted, you know, for middle school students. And I did really well in that. And then I went on to a high school that specialized in math and science as well, also in Harlem. And I had some excellent teachers there. Especially in my last year, I had an AP bio teacher that was phenomenal. And she kind of gave me the idea that, you know, I should possibly try to go into to the medical field. And so that's what I did when I applied for a college that also had its own medical school. And I was really intent on doing that. And I wanted to become a pediatrician. I mean, that's all I ever talked about. And I did all sorts of, you know, all the jobs that I basically had, even though I was working on campus, was affiliated with hospitals or medicine on some level. But then everything kind of changed when I entered my last year of school. And my mother was stricken with cancer. And, you know, pretty much maybe 3 months after she got diagnosed with cancer, she passed away. And that wasn't, you know, I mean, that was tragic and devastating enough to deal with, but then to have to deal with the doctors that she had, and she was in some of the most prominent hospitals in New York City, or probably in the entire country, and they didn't do right by her. They act very desensitized to, you know, her medical condition, and they didn't give us much of hope, any hope, if any. And that really ruined my idea of wanting to become a doctor, because I said to myself, you know what, if that's what a doctor is going to be like or act, then I don't want any parts of that. And,
right.
You know, that whole experience kind of shot my dreams down. And when I graduated from college, you know, I had this degree in biology, and I wasn't even sure what I was going to do with it. But luckily, I had an older sister. She was a teacher, a special education teacher at the time. And she said, you know what, you'll probably be really good at this as well. You know, you have the knowledge, you have the compassion, you have all those things. And at that time, which was in 2000, there was a really big teaching shortage, especially for science teachers. So she told me that I should probably apply, and I did in November. And I pretty much got a job as a teacher the very same day. And
wow.
Yeah. And it was a wow moment for me. And then it also kind of reinvigorated my spirit, you know, from, you know, having had, you know, dealt with that loss earlier in the year. You know, I got this new opportunity, and I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to pull all my energy into teaching now. And when I applied for teaching, the first position that I got was in the South Bronx, which was in one of the worst districts probably in the entire city. That particular area, too, if I'm not mistaken, is the poorest congressional district in the country. And, you know, and I did all my research going in. And I said, wow, I know I'm going to have a tough road ahead of me, But you know what? Everything that I know about science, everything that I know about math, I'm going to put into my teaching. So even if I go in there and, you know, the kids don't know anything about math or science, they're going to come out looking like scholars, at the, you know, by the time I'm done with them. So I had,
that's
you know,
right.
that
that's
all
right.
that. Of course, I had all that energy and motivation in me. I was going to teach those kids everything that I knew. And it didn't exactly work out that way because of, you know, I wasn't even trained in teaching at all. You know, that's one thing that is a failure to the educational system in New York City and probably in other places. I don't think there's enough training that is done for teachers on the level that it needs to be. But anyhow, you know, I came in there with that motivation, and I didn't realize, you know, like I said, how hard it was going to be. I came into a classroom with kids that were, it was a seventh grade classroom. I was their homeroom teacher. By November, that's when I got the position. I think I was like their fifth teacher or sixth teacher at that time,
wow.
which was crazy. And the average age for the kids that I taught was about maybe 15, and this was a seventh grade class, and that was a shocker. And then I had some kids in there that had some really, you know, strong behavioral issues, some kids that couldn't read. Like I said, you know, the area was a very, you know, the surrounding area, the neighborhood wasn't one of the best ones, so there was a lot of poverty that, you know, that was in that classroom. A lot of kids, you know, were from broken homes, single-parent homes, and all of that. And still, that didn't deter me. I still said, you know what, I'm going to do, you know, the best that I can with these kids. But it was very hard, you know. And I was expected to try to bring them up to grade level, which, you know, wasn't the easiest thing for me. And what I noticed with the first teaching job, that a lot more has to go into it than just, you know, teaching itself. It's not all about just, you know, concepts and all that. You have to be very compassionate. You have to be stern and disciplined. You know, you have to be disciplined within yourself, but also maintain consistency with the students too. They have to know that you care about them. And a lot of them are missing so many things that, you know, we can sometimes take for granted in terms of having a family and, you know, and having people be supportive and care about you. So a lot of nurturing goes into teaching as well. So I figured all that out that first year, and I had to figure it out pretty quickly too. But here I am, you know, 17 years later, still doing it. So.
right. That's definitely amazing. And matter of fact, I'm gonna let Jabril eat for a minute, and I'm gonna come back.
So you mentioned so much, man. So my mother is an educator. I come from one who was homeschooled for 7 years along with my younger brother, and was able to see at a very, very intimate level the sacrifice, the perseverance, and the love that came from a woman who put her all into teaching in an environment or at a time where, you know, homeschooling may have not been, you know, very popular, and there was a lot of people around us saying, oh, they need friends, they need to do X, Y, and Z, they need to be around people. And, just thanking God for my parents and putting us in the best position to succeed. As one who's taught for, you said 17 years?
Right.
And obviously you've had obstacles, challenges, you've sacrificed a lot, and you have been a part of some of the worst-off school districts, if you will. Do you find yourself sometimes teaching with a less than hopeful viewpoint of the future? And when I say that, is this is how things are going to be in terms of, like, how the students are excelling or lack thereof, how there's going to be a lack of funding for this particular school or school district, how there's going to be children who don't look to challenge themselves and pursue certain degrees and I'm just kind of here filling a role and just trying to go day to day? Or do you still maintain a high level of hope and trust in yourself and your own abilities to move them forward and push forward and really make a lasting impact on their lives?
Well, that was a really – thank you for that question, actually. That's a great question. I'm not going to lie. There are times where I am doubtful that, I can help these kids make the change that they are very capable of making. You know, when I look around sometimes and, honestly speaking, I have to even bring the school that I'm currently working in into the conversation, because you don't always see too many, the people that are supposed to be running the school, myself, teachers, administrators, they themselves don't always buy into this idea that, children can be molded and crafted into, do great things as long as they have support systems. You have people, that are supposed to, be there to help encourage these kids, and they don't see that they can, they'll look down on these students. Oh, well, they can't do that, and especially in the special education setting, those are things that I hear very often. Oh, well, why do you bother doing this? Why do you try to do that? That kid can't learn anything. That kid can't do anything. That kid doesn't have the cognitive skills. And because I am who I am, I definitely, I try to block those things out. I mean, it's been, like I said, 17, 18 years, and I think I have even more motivation now than I did then when I first started, because, these are my people that I'm teaching. These are brown and black children. And, if you don't take care of your own, who will? And so that's
right.
The type of mindset That's the type of mindset that I go into when I teach. And the special education department, in terms of resources and monies being allocated, our district probably gets more money than any other type of district across New York City. But in my particular school, for instance, you wouldn't see that those type of allocations being reflected in any manner. So we lack a lot of other things that schools, let's say in Lower Manhattan, where some of the richer students live, or in Queens,
mm-hmm.
We lack basic resources. And what I'll try to do, and I'm not trying to make myself sound like, I'm the I can fix it all, but at least what I try to do is I try to be the equalizer. So even though if I don't get, if I'm not going to get the resources I need, then I'll make sure I get them, either if I use my own money or whatever have you. And that's what I do. Like, for instance, like I mentioned earlier, I teach kindergarten to eighth grade. I'll look around at other schools across the country, and I'll try to see, what are kids, let's say, in middle America, in some of the more prominent schools learning. And I'll try to adapt that into, a way that my students can understand. Like, for instance, a lot of schools across the country, they're integrating math and science programs in order to teach STEM, and they're using, certain resources like coding and, those sorts of things. They're teaching kids how to program robots and, calculus at the same time. They're, integrating all these different types of sciences and math in order to teach kids these skills that are going to prepare them for the jobs of the future. And, I'll say to myself, well, why should our kids, my kids, be left out and not be able to get those same opportunities? But, things that I know that other kids are using around the country, like, there's these robots, I think they're called Dot and Dash. They're Bluetooth programmable robots they're made to teach kids coding. So I bought a couple of those, and I brought them into the classroom to get the kids, experience with using them. At least if they're getting some type of exposure on some level, that'll help to level the playing field in some way. Or I noticed, too, that kids are around the country are using Little Bits. I'm not sure if you've heard of that either, where,
no, I haven't.
You know, so they have these Little Bits kits, which are basically, they're kits that contain the foundations of any sort of electronic toy that any kid would buy, right? So they have, you know, sensors come in the kits and little motherboards and those sorts of things. And you can actually take these kits and build your own toy. You know, it's pretty simple to use.
Wow, that's pretty dope.
Yeah, it teaches kids about circuitry. And so, and you can use them to create any sort of model that you want, anything. I mean, it's limitless in terms of the ideas you can come up with. And so I bought one of those kits and brought it into class. As I said, you know, why can't these kids, why shouldn't these kids be able to get that exposure to that too? So, like I said, when I do feel like it's hard that, you know, what I'm doing isn't going to, you know, move the needle in any certain direction, I, you know, try to just step back and sit back and say, you know what? Well, maybe you can't move a mountain right now, but, you know, at least try to make a couple of steps. You know, what I'm doing isn't, you know, for nothing. There are kids that I teach that are very thankful, you know, for the exposure that I give to them. And I see it, you know, I see them making connections, you know, from one thing to the other, not even just in my class, but when they go to their music class or even their, you know, reading classes, they'll talk about certain things or activities that we've done. And so that gives me the energy that I need to keep going. I will tell you this, though, sometimes what is a bit of a struggle, too, is the level of parental involvement, you know, because I work in a poverty-stricken neighborhood, you know, and it can be generational, those sorts of things. You see that when the parents walk in, and sometimes they need just as much help as the kids do, you know, in terms of someone speaking to them and encouraging them and giving them, you know, some advice. And, you know, those can those sorts of issues can definitely, you know, be very, cause me to become disillusioned at times because, you know, when you try to work with students, you want them to be able to sustain whatever it is that you've taught them. And a lot of times when they're going home to issues where, you know, I don't have enough food to eat or, you know, I'm in a shelter. Right. Yeah. I have a huge population of students that are, you know, they're in a foster care system or they're in shelters. You know, a lot of students come to school because, you know, that's the only way they're going to get fed. And especially when you're working with special ed students, you get to see that played out even more so than a general ed population. I mean, I even teach kids that are, you know, have physical impairments. They're paralyzed, you know, fully or, you know, or partially. And, you know, they have it the worst sometimes because, you know, they might even be in a shelter, not with their families, or if they're with their families, the families can't afford to get them the certain things that they need in order to, you know, learn on any sort of level. And, you know, that it's heartbreaking because, you know, as a teacher, you can't fix those things, you know?
Right.
You can't fix that. But, you know, you try to go around the barriers and still try to be as productive as possible.
Yes, man. You know, go ahead.
Yep. Oh, go ahead, bro. You can go.
Okay, you sure? Cool. Now I was just saying, highlighting some of the things she talked about, just the fact that a teacher is one who wears many hats. And I think that it's important to understand that when you embark on the journey or when you set in your mind, I'm going to teach, you know, you're saying that I'm going to parent, I'm going to mentor, I'm going to be a shoulder to cry on. I'm going to be a cheerleader. I'm going to sometimes be someone who is a big brother, a big sister. I might be a cook. A lot of these things into a play when you are a teacher are very important. So I guess this, if you could unpack as one who's taught both special education and non-special education, the types of hats you worn and which hat, if any, in particular, has taught you the most about yourself and has allowed you to see success or overcome obstacles in other areas of life, like outside of teaching?
Well, I know definitely it has, first and foremost, has taught me to be very patient, extremely patient, you know, and that you're not always going to, you know, sometimes, and I'm sure you've heard other people say this that are educators, you know, it's a thankless job at times, you know. People don't realize sometimes until, you know, way, you know, after they've graduated from school and, you know, gotten into their profession, that's when they reflect and say, oh, you know what, my teachers helped me to get to this point, you know, that it's because they were diligent enough to, you know, keep on top of me and, you know, showed me, you know, how special I am. So that's one of the things. You know, you don't always see the rewards right away. But patience, I would have to say, has been my biggest teaching moment in this career. As far as the many hats that I've worn, you know, it's, like I said, because of the areas that I taught in, you know, there's so many different needs that these kids have that, you know, if you want to be successful, you definitely have to wear. You have to realize that at the end of the day, it's not always about you and what you want, you know, as the teacher. It's more about the kids that you know, you're servicing. And, you know, I'm always looking to inspire students and, you know, to make them feel good about what they're doing, to keep them engaged in any possible way. When I first started teaching that first year, when I had the seventh graders, you know, that were, you know, average age 15 in that classroom, I noticed that there was a lot of different needs in terms of kids just feeling like they, you know, they weren't being heard, or, you know, they didn't feel like they had an identity anywhere, or, you know, a lot of them had a lot of abusive issues going home with parents and, you know, things of that nature. And what I tried to do at that time was create sort of a big brother, big sister program. So it wasn't really anything formal, but I just had a couple of people that I knew who, you know, had some, you know, great careers going in different fields, like in IP telephony. Like, I had one friend that was doing that at the time, and another friend that was into computers. He built computers for a living. And so I had a couple of those people come in. Like, on the weekends, we would get a couple of kids from the classes that I taught, and we would have different outings with them. So I tried to get kids to see, you know, look, there's someone just like you from, you know, similar to the neighborhood that you lived in, and look at, you know, the successful things that they're doing in their life. And, you know, this is especially important for a lot of the male students that I had, because some of them didn't have fathers in the home, and they really needed, you know, a strong male figure, you know, someone to look up to kind of provide some guidance to them. So I tried to, you know, pair them up with people that I knew that could give them, you know, that particular need. And then let's see. I've even had students, you know, troubled students, some runaways. Believe it or not, I even had students that I've ended up on the front page of the Daily News.
Wow.
Awesome. Some, you know, even criminal backgrounds. I'm telling you, the full gamut. And some students that I had like that, like I said, I try to do the same thing, take them on outings, concerts, whatever the case, you know, just to give them, and it was less about, you know, where we were going and more about just having that experience with people like them that they could sort of look up to. I had this one student in particular that was being bullied a lot because of her size, and she was having some issues at home. She was being neglected, and when she would come to school, you know, the kids would make fun of her and say things about her. And so I would just try to talk to her and find out what her interests were. And I think by the end of the school year, I was able to even donate a computer to her.
Wow.
That's awesome. She told me that she liked poetry and she liked writing. And so whatever I could do to kind of keep her head up, you know, did it. So yeah, the needs can go very far and very long. But, you know, as long as I have the opportunities to give, then I'll give. You know, it's not even a sacrifice to me. You know, as long as I know that it can help them and it'll go a long way, then I'll do it. But, yeah, you, as a teacher, you're wearing the hat of a parent, first and foremost. And a lot of times you're, you know, like a social worker where you're talking to kids about their problems. And, you know, you have to build a very strong rapport with you. Consistency is key, because if they feel like you're going to flake out or, you know, you're not really there for them, then, you know, you've lost them and you won't be able to reach them at any level. You know, so definitely I've tried to have those type of relationships with my students where they can talk to me about things that bother them, or, you know, if they need, you know, just need maybe even a shoulder to cry on. You know, I remember way back when I was teaching in high school, you know, I used to go with the kids to volunteer around the neighborhood. I did different projects with them, you know, where it came to, like, some of the parks that they lived near, whether it was plants and trees. You know, I got my hands dirty with them, you know, painting murals around the Bronx, or volunteering at soup kitchens. I did that with them as well, at daycare centers. I think a couple of kids I took with me to a daycare center, where most of the kids that went to this particular center were, they were stricken with AIDS. So just anything that I can do to, you know, build that type of relationship with them, and then also see, too, that they have, you know, they have reasons to be appreciative for what they have, you know. That's what I've tried to do.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that's definitely very beautiful. My question is kind of similar to Jabril's question, as it relates to the many hats you've worn. I myself have been teaching at Mohammed University of Islam for about going on 4 years now, and I pretty much just show them whatever science that they're using, I show them how to apply it in a real life setting. And I see you taught biology, chemistry, environmental science, and I've done the similar subjects: chemistry, medicine, you know, anatomy, physiology. What has been your response from the different areas of science? Like, how have the children responded differently to each one, or what are some of the similarities?
Well, when it comes to the special education students, they love STEM.
Mm-hmm.
Like they completely are so involved in that. And, you know, because like I said, I try to make it a hands-on experience. I try to act more like a facilitator than anything. So, you know, I'll let them kind of direct me to what they want to do and get them involved in discussions. Oh, well, what would you like to do? Let's plan on some activities that we can do for this particular subject. So that's, they love that. Like I mentioned earlier, last year, actually, I did this big unit on engineering. So every month it was a different level, of a different type of engineering that I got the kids focused on. So Like, for instance, we did chemical engineering, and we, you know, like shown them dry ice before. We did some things centered around that. A lot of them never even heard of dry ice, never knew what it was, what it did. And then we did some activities surrounding that. We did some activities with, you know, different household chemicals, as well as, you know, laboratory chemicals too. And, you know,
right.
So they could see, you know, what the results would be like. And then I've done paper engineering too with this particular group. So, and I've tried to make it, you know, as out of the box as possible to keep them, you know, engaged. So, like, for instance, I did a unit where we made, was it a puppet show? Using paper, and
Okay. Then
we also made something called a tilt switch with paper, and I introduced them to different types of materials that, you know, conduct electricity. They got to use copper tape, some things that I even, you know, didn't even know existed that I found, you know, that was new for me too. But yeah, they used copper tape to make something called a tilt switch, which was the item itself was made out of cardstock, and it was shaped like a cylinder, and then they used copper tape inside of it with LED and a watch battery, and they had to tilt the cylinder back and forth to get the light to turn on, those sorts of things. So, and not everything is always high tech, but as long as it's hands on, and, you know, at times I won't even always give them the full description of how it works, because sometimes that will come after the fact. So I try to work that way too. So I'll give them the materials at first, and then I'll tell them, okay, what can we do with these things? How do you see this working? What do you envision the end product to look like? You know, just to get that, you know, those sorts of questions going in their head to get them to think on their own. But yeah, the response to STEM has by far been the most appreciated, I would say. As far
right.
as with general ed, I didn't really have you know, the latitude that I wanted to kind of be you know, flexible and you know, with the type of activities that I did, because everything was so much geared towards those state exams. And I'm assuming that it's still like that even now. But even so, you know, whatever type of activities that I did give them, I would try to relate it right back to the real world as much as possible. And I feel like when you do that more with students, it definitely makes more of a lasting impression.
Definitely.
One thing I do remember that I did with a biology regents class some years ago is I think I did an activity on diabetes testing. And at the time, you know, when we were having discussions about those things, I knew that that was a concern for some of the students because, you know, in that area that I taught in, you know, you have a lot of people that are afflicted with cardiovascular disease and diabetes and high blood pressure and whatnot. So I did this one activity on diabetes testing, and the kids basically had to do a urine analysis. So I gave them like a fake sample of urine that I made, and if I'm not mistaken, they had to use, what was it, Benedict solution to test for the presence of sugar in the urine.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, that type of activity went over really well because, like I said, they had family members that, you know, were suffering from that. So, you know,
Right. That's
what I noticed. The biggest response always comes from things that they can apply to their own lives or maybe something
right. That
they, you know that a family member is going through or they themselves. That even makes me think about actually this project that I did last year with the special ed students. I made them, I think that same week we were doing paper engineering, we had to develop a packaging for a food item. So they had to make. So I think it was s'mores. That was that was So one of the biggest motivators as a student that I have is food. And, you know, you can do a lot with food and food sciences. And But in that particular activity, you know, I got to teach them about natural foods and reading ingredients and those sorts of things. So, you know, as they made the s'mores, they had to figure out, well, what were the best ingredients to use, which, you know, look at the ingredients, look at all these, you know, hard to pronounce names. Does that sound like something you want in your body? You know, we were able to have
those sorts of things.
And then after they made it, then they had to figure out what was the best way to package it. So then I turned into a business. Okay, so now you're selling this. You know, you are a business owner. You want to sell this particular item. What's the best way to package it? You know, what's going to cost the least amount of money, you know, to package, or what do you want your package to look like? And, you know, I set myself up as like a manufacturer, and they had to buy products from me. So I gave them like a little budget, and they had to use aluminum, wax paper, and a couple other materials. They had to choose which was the best packaging for the s'mores. And then I had we had to run it through a test to see, well, the package you choose, was it, you know, can it withstand, you know, being heated over a certain temperature? Can it withstand, you know, is it waterproof? Can it withstand, you know, environmental elements? So, you know, you could, I tried to take something really simple that was almost like, you know, something like a real life sort of scenario and present it to them. And that fared out to be pretty well, so. Like, again, I would have to say that those are the biggest responses. When you do something that, you know, is relatable, that's real life oriented, that's always going to win them over.
What would you say is the is your most favorite subject to teach out of all those different areas of science?
Oh, I would have to say biology. I love biology. I mean, that's the reason why I went to school, you know, to college in the first place, because, you know, that's what I got my degree in. I love it. I think the body is a wonderful, you know, a wonderful work of art that God made.
Yes, it is.
And, and there's always so much to learn about it. Like the learning of the body is never ending. So even though you may think, oh, I know how, you know, this system works and that system works, there's always something else to learn. And you know, we don't even know. You know, you can study as much as you can and you still won't even know all the intricate workings of the body. But yeah, but that's what I love to teach. And it's actually, that's what I'm teaching right now in terms of my special ed students. So we are learning about all the different systems, you know, the nervous, circulatory, all of that. And so much, you can pull so many activities from that and relate it to so many different things. But I love doing dissections.
Yes.
Yes, I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty. And actually, this week with the kids, just a couple of days ago, we dissected a pregnant rat, which...
Oh, wow.
yes.
That's a lot.
That's dangerous.
Serious. So, and I, you know, this is something that I do even with my kindergarten students, to tell you the truth. I it's like I'm a no-holds-barred sort of teacher. Why shouldn't a kindergartner learn about those body systems? You know, you might have to adapt certain terminology for them to a level that they can understand, but they should know, you know, about their bodies. And I don't try to baby any of my students. So, you know, just like I expose the older kids to things like that, I'll expose the younger ones to it too.
Right.
But yeah, but that's what we did this week. We dissected this rat and we took out all the organs. And, you know, when I'm working with the students, I'll play like I don't know what it is we're looking at. So while they're just dissecting it, I'll say, oh, well, what's that? Oh, I don't know what that is. Can you tell me what that is? What does it do? You know, so that's always a great thing for me, because, you know, if they can definitely answer to it, then I know I've done my job.
Right, right.
So yes, but I thoroughly enjoy biology. You know, I'm always constantly reading on, you know, new developments, you know, for ways to enhance our health.
Right.
Something that me and my older sister are always talking about is, you know, how to maintain good health, you know, which is the hardest thing to do currently in the society that we live in, because you have all these, you know, GMOs and you know, food
yeah.
additives, you know, preservatives and dyes and all these things that are designed to break your body down and hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, you know, I'm so interested, you know, as everybody should be, you know, in trying to preserve.
Right, right, right.
And I have a young daughter to think about, too. So I'm constantly, you know, trying to make sure that my health is maintained and, you know, that I live as long as I possibly can. So what I would have to say bye.
All right.
Biology
okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Have you been able to influence your daughter when it comes to the sciences at all?
Oh, definitely. She... starting at the age of, let's say, about one and a half or two, she's always been very intrigued by the moon and the stars. As soon as she was able to talk, she, you know, started talking about, you know, the moon every day. And, you know, I think I started teaching her about the phases of the moon at about 2 years old. And, you know, we've gotten so many books about it. We've gone to planetariums. I built a model of the solar system with her. So, yeah, she's very influenced by all the things that I do. I mean, I have a little science lab set up in my basement just for her with microscopes and all sorts of things.
Wow,
nice.
That's pretty dope.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, she definitely needs to know about, you know, about this world around her. And, like I said, I don't think that, you know, no child is too young to learn about science. You know,
right.
I was listening to your podcast that you did a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Graham, Achille Graham. And
I remember him
saying that science is God, and he's absolutely right. I mean, I thoroughly believe that myself.
That's right.
And so so I don't have any choice but to teach her, you know, about science. So, you know, said we try to make visits out to museums. You know, they have around where I live one of those sort of, explorative type of museums, a hands-on thing, science museum around here for kids around her age. So I take her to that. But, you know, we're always having discussions about you know, the science and biology and life itself. And, you know, kids are just, they're never too early to learn.
That's right. Absolutely. Jabril, you got something?
Yes, sir. You know, you mentioned so much, particularly when it came to science and God, you know, going into your studies and studying biology as well as African American studies, you know, as students of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, we're taught about the importance of root knowledge and also the knowledge of self and the knowledge of God being one and the same. So could you speak to how the study of biology and African American studies complemented each other, particularly in understanding who you are as an individual, who you are in relation to your people and your history, and from like a biological perspective and just from a social and personal perspective?
Oh, well, that's excellent. Thank you. That's a beautiful question.
Right. Thank you.
Well, I guess I'll take it back to my own family. I mean, my mother, she wasn't exactly a registered Muslim. I believe growing up, we had an uncle that was, and he would share a lot of the information that he read with her. And so I grew up in a household taught up, you know, my mother always taught me that, you know, the black man is the original man. And, you know, the black man is God. And
go ahead.
And I've always had that foundation. And, you know, throughout my own life in terms of, you know, dealing with science and being a student, you know, I've looked through the history and, you know, not all of the history books at schools, of course, will teach you, you know, those truths. And so you need a family, a strong family, mother and father to definitely show you that those things are what is truth.
But
the history of black people accomplishments that they've made, you know, not just, you know, I mean, just for, if you look at the United States alone, I mean, basically, you wouldn't even be able to do half of the things that you do in your household without, you know, the help of a black man or woman, the developments that they made, the inventions, the contributions. I mean, I was just even reading the other day about how the idea of even a cell phone or a handheld computer was developed by a black woman. And so many things. Right. I'm even finding it, you know, like I said, I'm learning every day and learning so many things now. But, you know, me, my heritage, where I come from, those are definitely things that are very important to me. And, you know, it's definitely something that I know I need to pass down to my daughter. And it's always been instilled to me to not forget who you are and what you're capable of, and that, you know, you should not have any fear about what, you know, you can be. You know, you shouldn't let fear be able to stop you. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, when I got into college, I decided to minor in African studies and just learn more about, you know, that side of myself. And I think both subjects are a perfect marriage to each other. You can't have, you know, black history without science. You know, because that's who we are. You know, science is what you are, you know, internally. It's the world around you. It's the beginning. It's the end. It's the question, the answer, the cause and the effect. It's all of those things. And so,
that's right.
Right. So that's one of the reasons why I said, you know, I have to pursue this, you know, when I got into school. That's pretty much who I am. You know, I'm very grounded in my blackness, and
Go ahead, yes, ma'am, as you should be.
Yes, when I wake up every day, you know, I'm proud to be black, and you know, I thank God that I am black, and and you know what? To be honest, I don't even know exactly. I can't even pinpoint the exact point in my life as to when I became as interested as I am in science. But I'm glad that I am, and I'm glad that I'm doing well in it. It's just always, I'm always going to have that thirst to want to learn about my people and their contributions, and, you know, I look forward to the many more that we can make, and hopefully my daughter, you know, inspiration, hopefully, that I'm giving to her, you know, hopefully she can go on to do something great as well. I hope I answered your question. I'm trying to figure out.
You definitely did, and you definitely did. You know, just the energy, the vigor, and also just the fact that I didn't know your background. I didn't know that there was a history as it pertained to the Nation of Islam or Islam in general. So that was a revelation to me. And I think that it's important that when you deal with the general education or special education, you know, it's important for young people or our people in general to know that the study of the sciences, the study of STEM, the study of really all things is the study of themselves. So a lot of times we think about us separate from these studies. And what happens is you start to think that not only can't you, are you incapable maybe, or it's hard for you, but you really are taking away or lessening yourself when you don't pursue these type of, whether it's a degree or just the knowledge thereof related to the STEM field. So I think what you're doing is awesome. You know, being able to teach for so long and staying committed to the process, and also understanding the greater and deeper meaning behind what it is that you do in relation to yourself and your students. So I think that was a wonderful answer.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am. Tariq, did you have something else?
Oh, yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, yes, okay. So when I think of so can you speak to some of the feedback you've gotten from students, both special and general education, the general education classes? I'm saying that because one of the biggest things I find is important is that students or young people in general a lot of times feel they aren't listened to and aren't given an opportunity to enlighten one who's been trying to impart knowledge on them or trying to talk to them how they feel about what they've been given or how they feel about known issues, both big and small. So if any type of feedback sticks out to you, if you've afforded that opportunity to both types of classes you've given and how that's affected you afterwards.
That's a really good question as well. So as far as the feedback, well, in terms of the special education students, I always find it that they're a lot more receptive of what I do. You know, they, how can I put this delicately? I think because when the difference between, I guess, a general ed and a special education student is that special education students, it's kind of hard to find the right words, but sometimes I guess they're more aware of themselves in a sense where if they aren't able to do, you know, a certain thing, like they get more frustrated about it, let's say. And so when you're able to connect to them in a way that they can understand and where they can feel confident in that understanding, they're definitely very more appreciative of that. And that's one thing that's really, you know, warming to the heart, you know. So, you know, I'll have students coming up to me after class sometimes when they see me in a hallway. There's all this love that they give back. Hi, Miss Watkins. And they're running over to hug me, or they can't wait to you know, see me the next time. They're constantly asking, oh, what are we going to do next week? I can't wait. I can't wait. So, they, you know, a lot of the students, I would say most of my students, because I'm the only science teacher that I that's in my school from the kindergarten to eighth graders. They really enjoy, you know, what I offer to them, which is, you know, a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. General ed, you know, it's crazy, but I guess, you know, I've always felt like, you know, for most of them when they see, you know, because there's not too many black teachers, let alone female teachers, that I've met with. In the city, you know, most are usually white males, and so I always feel like when kids see me, I always feel like initially, you know, and upon meeting me, you know, I'm always gonna hope that they'll be thrilled. Oh, you know what? Here's this black teacher. She's black like me, or you know, she's from my neighborhood, and you know that I feel like they're going to immediately be receptive of that, but it never really works out that way. So it's almost as if, you know, I found that, you know, I've had to kind of prove myself to them probably much more than, let's say, a white teacher would. If I guess that's all they're used to. They're used to seeing, just white teachers, white teachers. So when, you know, they see me come along, it's the response or the feedback that I get initially isn't, you know, like, you know, what I'm expecting it to be. Yeah, so, but, you know, down the line after I show them, you know, it's almost like I have to prove to them, hey, I am capable of teaching science. I'm just as good as, you know, the white teachers here.
Right.
And that's definitely a struggle that I think black teachers deal with across the board, you know, in whatever subject area that they teach. It's not even just from the students. Sometimes certain administrators, they don't really see black teachers as, you know, scholars or experts in their field. Sometimes they only look at us as disciplinarians, you know. That, you know, well, we can get them to control a class, you know, but don't expect them to know, you know, as much as, let's say, their white counterparts would know.
Right.
So I can tell you, actually, I can tell you I've experienced that not just in a general ed setting with administrators, but even in a special ed education setting, and even amongst African-American administrators that I've had, like they'll treat some of the black teachers differently than they do from the white teachers, which is, you know, insane. But yeah, but that's one of the things that I've noticed. You have to go through this, you have to go through this level of proving yourself and proving that, you know, you are supposed to be here and you're capable of doing this job. And, you know, by on both sides, from the kids and administration. And then after that, you know, then you'll, you know, you can kind of make some progress or, you know, break through the concrete in a sense. But the response, you know, afterwards, you know, after the kids can see what I'm capable of doing and, you know, like I said, I can get them engaged and keep them motivated and, you know, make things exciting for them after that, then, you know, the feedback is usually pretty good. You know, the kids definitely feel like the way that I teach and the things that I have taught them are, you know, have significance and matter to them. And, you know, I've had kids tell me, oh, you know, I went home and spoke about this particular thing that you taught, you know, with my parents, and this is what they said, and, you know, they've actually taken a lot of things that I've taught back home with them and, you know, have, you know, had some sort of conversation about it with their family, which is, you know, is great. That's exactly what you want. You want, you know, the things that you teach to have an impact, a lasting impact.
Right.
Hopefully that can help, you know, spearhead them into maybe a, you know, some sort of future in the sciences too. And that's what I always want. At the end of the day, like I'll even tell my special education students this now. And matter of fact, just a couple of days ago, I did a nice presentation on black inventors and scientists for them. And I said, you know, I want you to walk away after seeing this. I want you to walk away thinking that you could do the same thing that they can do. Why couldn't you, you know? And, you know, I have to be more forceful with that message because they are special ed and because, you know, they have certain deficiencies and because, you know, people are already looking at them thinking, you know, they can't do anything. So, you know, I'll even get up and I'm, you know, I try to be very enthusiastic when I teach. So I'm walking around the classroom telling these kids, come on, look at this. You know, she, you know, this inventor did this and this scientist did that. Why can't that be you? That could be your name up there too one day. Or you could go on and become a doctor and end up saving my life one day. Who knows? You know?
Right.
And usually the feedback, you know, is pretty good, you know. So I try to be as inspiring as I can and motivating as I can because, you know, I want the best for them. So, you know, and I don't take what I do lightly at all. I really don't. You know, because you don't know what you can say or what you can do, you know, whether you say something in a moment, you know, you don't know what light bulb you're going to turn on in a child's brain that could be that defining moment that says to them, you know what, because she said this or did this, I might go out and, you know, try to, you know, invent this or, you know, apply for this school. You never know. So, you know, I always try to keep that in mind.
Okay. Well, this has definitely been a very educational show, no pun intended. And it's just been, you know, I've learned a lot, and, you know, just you know, how I can approach some of the things I do with some of the students that I engage with. What are some of the different types of, because I see you're getting ready to go into entrepreneurship. What are some of the things that you're able to use as an educator to, you know, learn more about business and applying science to business, or just the business of doing anything scientific?
Well, you know, one thing that even though I do love teaching, you know, I do get a little disillusioned by just how the New York City Board of Education does things and how they aren't, of course, they're not equal in terms of how they allocate certain monies. And, you know, you can't really expect them to be because they're a corrupt system. And so I get really, you know, upset with that. And sometimes I will, you know, I do think about how long it is that I'm going to be a teacher, you know, what other avenues can I break into. And, you know, being an entrepreneur is definitely one of them. I actually just recently went back to school and just earned a master's in health sciences and public health. So I was thinking about, what can I do in terms of helping out the community that I teach in, but in somewhat of a different way? Because one of the things that I'm speaking about earlier was that, you know, the area itself is poverty-stricken, the neighborhoods that I've taught in, poverty-stricken. And, you know, I live about an hour and a half outside of the city in Poughkeepsie. And so, you know, I make that commute every day. And it's two worlds. It's two different worlds. You know, where I live now, you know, everybody's a homeowner. You know, most of the schools up here are, you know, pretty okay. You know, and it's two different worlds. It's markedly different than from what I see when I go into the Bronx. I mean, right away, as soon as I come off the highway, you got, you know, women's shelters and, you know, people standing out on the corners, you know, at all times of the morning doing God knows what. And, you know, there's a lot of crime, a lot of drugs, and a lot of health issues, too. I was working on my master's. I found out, you know, so much about, as far as, you know, statistically speaking, about how the Bronx fares, you know, by far the worst in the entire city when it comes to, you know, all sorts of issues. Cardiovascular disease, teen pregnancy, cancer, all those things. And even if I didn't know that, all I would have to do is walk around the neighborhood and, you know, you could see that. So people just not taking care of themselves. And, you know, so I was thinking, well, you know, I'll definitely want to make those sorts of changes. I want to help people in that respect as far as maybe designing some sort of health promotional program in that neighborhood, or maybe counsel people to try to lead them to live better lifestyles. Because one thing I noticed is that, you know, the kids that I teach, the reason why some of them are even in special ed to begin with is because of the generational impact that health disparities have had on them. And,
right.
And I'll tell you, there's some kids that I teach that really do not need to be in special ed. Like, there was nothing wrong with them except that maybe, you know, their you know, parents didn't live a healthy lifestyle, or neglected their health and, you know, or neglected their child's health, and that's why they're in the situation that they're in. And some of these kids are on so many different medications for so many different reasons. And none of it had needed to happen if, you know, somebody just down the line said, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to change my lifestyle and try to make a better way for my family, for the descendants, you know, of my family. And so I was thinking to, you know, maybe, you know, in some aspect, maybe I can open up a business, and I'm not even sure how, but to counsel people in terms of helping them improve their lifestyles. And so, like, I would probably hold some sort of workshop or teach people about how to monitor their health in various capacities. And then also, I'll just teach them about the generational impact that bad health has, you know. The Bronx is a food desert. There's virtually almost nowhere to get healthy food. And, you know, if you can, you know, if there is any such places outside of the Bronx, then you would have to travel a ways to get to it. And it's expensive.
Right.
You know, but one thing that people can sort of do is maybe grow their own garden. I know that that's something that I read about happening right now in South Central Los Angeles. There's a guy by the name of Ron Finley. I think he did a TED Talk where he was talking about how, you know, the people in that area in South Central, a lot of Black people are suffering from, you know, cardiovascular disease, just like the Bronx, you know, kidney issues. There's dialysis centers on every corner. And so what he tried to do was to get people to, you know, grow their own vegetables. And he took a plot right off of a sidewalk somewhere, I think not too far from his house, and started growing vegetables and was giving them away to people for free. And then, you know, it became a hit thereafter. And so I was thinking, well, can I do something like that, you know? You know, I would need the support too, but something, anything to kind of kickstart people to try to live better, eat better, because, you know, their kids are suffering. Our kids are suffering because of the bad choices that we're making as their parents and grandparents. So, yeah, that's one thing that I thought about doing, or even just counseling people. That's another thing. I've always been kind of told that I'm a good listener.
that's so key. Oh, my God. So key.
Yeah, definitely.
So I thought about possibly doing that, you know. And I know that, you know, I can only do but so much as a person, but, you know, I'd like to even, I just want to try to make a start somewhere, you know. And there are some, I guess, programs in the Bronx that are trying to help people currently in you know, the state of health that they're in now, but there isn't enough, and they're not having that huge of an impact, or they're not being advertised enough or whatever have you. So I at least want to try to help out, you know, in that way as well. Try to advertise these programs. But like I said, just even make one up of my own and try to get people to do better, you know. And then I have a sister. She's actually currently trying to be registered with the nation. And
awesome.
One of the things that she told me about she knows about this website. I think it's called the Official Black Wall Street.
Yes.
She was saying, you know, that we need to buy black and you know, do things for us and, you know, buy things from each other. And so she has kind of been taking me, and now this is different from, you know, having anything to do with health or science or anything related to that. But she's trying to think of ways in which we can start start a black owned business. You know, we both looked at the website, and we're trying to figure out what is it that people need, that, you know, where's their need, like in which industries, and, you know, maybe we can work from there. but, you know, provide a service, you know, that is Black-owned for Black people that is in need right now. So she's trying to, you know, get me linked up with her in that respect. So that's also something that I'm thinking about as well. You know, I mean, I think everybody should at some point, right, try to, you know, work for themselves and not be held, I don't want to say captive, but, you know, it's better to also work for yourself than to always be held under, you know, the constraints by other industries and systems, especially when you know that, you know, they're not out for the, looking out for the best interests of your people.
Right.
And, so that's something that I'm definitely thinking about or trying to pursue as well.
Okay. Well, that's definitely one of the areas that I'm currently involved in, you know, community health workshops, medical research, different things like that. So if there's anything that you need help with, we're more than happy to assist you. Brother Jabril, is there anything that you had?
I did, and this was like kind of like the culmination. You know, so we say, you know, special, you know, education. And I think that words, you know, the Honorable Farrakhan Tariq, if you remember, he taught us that he wanted us to be masters of elocution, meaning basically the spoken word. And I think that when you say someone or give a word to something about a person, it shapes their identity and their relationship to themselves and how they relate to others. So in your personal experience, do you feel that the term special is the most suited term for those students or people with that aren't neurotypical or do have certain diagnoses or impediments? And if not, what would be a better term to use for that may give a stronger sense of self and self-identity as they relate to their surroundings and the rest of the world?
You know what? I would have to say that I would keep the word. I mean, I think the word special is appropriate for them, but not in the sense that it's used as now. I mean, special in the sense because they all uniquely have something that they have to offer that makes them stand out far above, you know, a lot of other people, people that aren't, you know, have certain disabilities. I mean, these kids have taught me a lot what it means to be, you know, to be compassionate, to be humane, and definitely a lot of them, they can take the beauty from something so small and insignificant that, you know, you take for granted every day, you know, because you just do.
Right.
And so I definitely think that the word still applies to them, but not in the way that it's used as it is now. These students, they, despite some of, and like I said, I have the full gamut, kids that have cognitive disabilities or are blind or, you know, can't hear, but, or like I said, are paralyzed. But even though they have those impairments, they still will do their damnedest, most of them, to try to find a way to communicate with you, to find a way to learn something new. They will still try to strive to learn, period,
right,
which is amazing. I mean, there's so many students now that I'm thinking of off the top of my head, you know, that they're amazing at the will that they have. And it pushes you as a teacher to, you know, to seek every strategy, approach necessary, you know. And I definitely am not someone that's fixed at any certain point. I'm flexible, and I let them lead me sometimes. Oh, you know, this kid might like music, so let me incorporate music into my lessons in a way that, you know, is going to make them engaged, you know, and approach whatever concepts that I'm trying to teach in a more direct way, you know. So they are special in their abilities to do that. And I don't know where I heard this this word from before or where I read it from, but I remember reading that, you know, to use the word handicapped is sort of a misnomer, but instead we should use the word handicapable.
Mm.
So it's not
that's
that.
A good, wow. Mm-hmm.
So they're far more capable at doing the things that they can do than the things that they aren't able to do, if that makes any sense. And those are the things that you have to seek out. And you know, they'll definitely let you know what they can do. And that's, like I said, I think they are special in their own unique way and what they can offer to the educator, because certainly I am not doing all the teaching, and, you know, in many ways they're teaching me how to become a better human being, you know, and
right,
to be tolerant that, you know, all of us, you know, have different things to share and add to the table, you know, bring to the table, and, you know, we're not all the same. And so, you know, that, you know, who can ask for anything more? I mean, that I would have to say that, yes, they are special.
Wow. Indeed, indeed. And we can see the result of them, of, you know, you engaging with them and the way you speak about them and the way you've committed your life to educating them. So we definitely see how much they're rubbing off on you. And I'm sure if we met them, we can see what you've committed to them as well. So we want to, first off, we're actually approaching the end of the show. And I just want to first say thank you for taking the time out of your weekend to shed some light.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely,
oh,
absolutely.
Thank you,
to shed
please.
Some light on what you're doing. Absolutely, yes, ma'am. And one of the things we like to ask our guests on every show is, what does science mean to you personally? If you were to you know, talk to a young person and ask you, Ms. Watkins, what does science mean to you? Why is it so important to you? And what does it mean to the overall goal of, you know, of your life?
Well, I would have to tell them that science is life itself. As I mentioned earlier, science is God. It's a tool. It's a tool that you can use to impact something. It's the interaction between the tool and the material that you're trying to impact, or the people that you're trying to impact. It's everything. It's, you know, the air that we breathe. It's the reason why we talk, move, blink, you know, think. It's the living and the non-living. It's the planets. It's the solar system. It's the soil and everything
right.
between. Like I said, science is God, and it's the reason for our existence. And it's something that, you know, I hold very near and dear to my heart, that I have complete faith in, and that I supremely love and yearn to learn more about every day.
Mm. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Well, once again, Ms. Watkins, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's been thoroughly been a treat to have you on and to learn from you. Brother Jabril, do you have anything you'd like to add real quick?
Yes, sir. You know, so this has been another cracking open, another STEM Files family. You know, this was a, you know, very, very, it hit close to home for me, you know, as coming under a woman who educated me my whole life, continues to educate me, and seeing that kind of like that reflection tonight, really done an awesome job. And I pray Allah blesses you to continue to impart, you know, knowledge and wisdom and just a hope into your students as you move forward, you know, 17 plus years. That's no light feat. And we all need to really respect and honor those who teach us. You know, there's a really wonky or ill term that say those who can't do teach. And I think that it's really those who can't do, you know, they can't necessarily teach, but those who can teach, I think, can also do and do at a high level. Because all those who've done whatever it is that we feel are extraordinary things came through a teacher, came through a teaching vein. So we really need to understand the importance of having teachers and putting them in a proper perspective. So thank you so much, and I definitely look forward to assisting you and having mutual relationships going forward for mutual gain. So with that, Tariq, what's our next show looking like? What are the people in for?
Actually, we're having another back-to-back STEM Files weekend. We have another guest tomorrow, Sunday, March 4th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. It's Brother Victor Muhammad again for the third time. He actually requested to be on the show again. He's going to be talking about the human consequences of antibiotic-resistant microorganisms, and do we have the options to resist the threats to our lives and health? So he is going to be gracing us, yes, sir, gracing us with his presence again for the third time tomorrow, 6 p.m. So same time, same place, and we look forward to having you on as listeners. And Ms. Watkins, we also look forward to you being a listener as well for the show tomorrow.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I will be. And, again, I just want to take the time out to thank the both of you. I think you're definitely, the both of you are doing an extraordinary job. I mean, both, you know, very intelligent, young, black, powerful men who come from,
I'm sure,
awesome families.
Praise
you. Yes,
ma'am. Thank you.
And I hope
thank
I can
you so
do
much.
Half as good of a job, half as good of a job as your family have done with you. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, ma'am. And how can people contact you if they want to learn more about what you're doing?
Well, I'm not really have a big social media presence. So is it okay if I just give out my email?
Yes, ma'am. That's fine. However you want to engage with the community.
Yes. So my email is shalik2101@gmail.com. That's shalik2101@gmail.com. So that's the best way to get in contact with me.
Okay, can you say that one more time?
Yes, that's shalik2101@gmail.com.
Awesome, awesome. Well, once again, Ms. Watkins, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We hope to have you on in the future. And as my co-host and my right hand has said earlier, we look forward to helping you and collaborating with you on many different things. And Jabril, you want to close us out?
Yes, sir. There you have it, family. The STEM Files, always bringing you the best and the brightest in the STEM fields, industry, and out. I am your co-host, Jabril Muhammad, and this is your host, Tariq Muhammad. Until next time, family, where we go even deeper into some more sciences and hope to continue to give you a wonderful experience. Thank you all so much for listening, and we are out here at Original Man Scientific.
All right. Good evening, everyone.